Soha, I'm really happy that we can talk with each other. One day before the march in Pakistan, the Orat march, and I have seen on your Twitter account that you have also published a charter of demands. And I would like to know, what are you demanding, maybe also in with reference to the COVID-19 pandemic?
Of course. So the thing is that because of the country that we live in, obviously having the Aurat March at all is a huge deal, right? Having women and trans people and non-binary folks congregate together, congregate politically on the street is a really huge deal. And the march is historical for that reason. And so there is a pandemic, but we've been marching for the last 3 years. We've been placing demands in front of the state for the last 3 years. And the condition in our country has gotten worse and worse. There is a huge increase in violence, especially because cities in Pakistan were also under a lockdown during the peak of COVID-19. And so there was a huge increase in cases of domestic violence across class. So it wasn't just that a particular segment of society was being affected. People from across class were being affected. In the past year, 15 transgender persons have been killed. Cases of rape are, it's daily. Just 2 weeks ago, we had two cases. One was of an 11-year-old girl. One was of a 4-year-old girl. And our state is quite anti-woman. And so this time around, we've decided that, like, we understand that there is a pandemic happening and we understand that there is a danger in congregation, which is why we have very strict SOPs. But then we really, really need to come out on the streets. We can't afford in this country to prioritize COVID because our safety is already not guaranteed. Our lives are already in danger. Pakistan is quite diverse. We have people from the Hindu community living here and people from the Christian community living here, and they are severely marginalized. They are not safe at all. Young girls from the Hindu community and the Christian community are forced to convert and are forced to marry much, much, much older Muslim men. And we currently have a bill that has not yet been passed in Parliament. So, for example, that is part of one of our demands, that this bill needs to be passed in Parliament and that these protections need to be ensured across the entire province of Sindh and across the rest of Pakistan as well. Similarly, another one of our demands is, so in Pakistan over here, we have a provincial government and a federal government. So we have certain demands from the provincial government and certain demands from the federal government. And if you like, and if there's time, I can talk about them.
Yeah, that would be really nice. Yeah.
All right, sure. So the theme of this year's march is patriarchal violence. And the way we see patriarchal violence is a system and a mode of thinking that affects us socially and economically and operates in our families, operates in our society, and then is also perpetuated through our institutions, such as the state. Despite the fact that our demands every year are demand an end to violence, demand an end to everything that comes under patriarchal violence, we have decided to make it a focus this year. So we have a 14-point agenda, which are very specific demands from our provincial government and from our federal government. So one demand that we have is that we establish gender-based violence reporting cells across all police stations. And what we want is we want women and people from the trans community in Pakistan as police officers who are sensitized about these issues, who have specialized training, who can deal with cases of gender-based violence in police stations. Currently, the situation is really bad. Women, trans people, non-binary people who do end up going to the police to report these crimes often get no resolution. Our courts provide people with no justice when it comes to this. I can give you a very simple example. If somebody over here has been raped and decides to go to the police will simply like ask a woman, for example, if a woman goes to report a case, what she was wearing, why she was out at a particular time, and what did she do to incite that kind of violence, right? So it's the police itself asks these questions. So this is why we demand that the provincial government provide us with separate gender-based violence reporting cells with women and trans people as police officers with specialized training. Our second demand is that we have help desks at police stations and in our courts for women, trans, and non-binary people to be able to report violence and harassment. And so often, for example, people over here are also not, people are not aware of the laws that are available to them and that they can make use of in order to protect themselves. So help desks are a good way for people to seek assistance and to seek immediate assistance. Then the third thing that we want is we want the state to enforce effective sensitization training of medical and counseling professionals to gender and sexual minorities. And we want them to increase the number of women and trans women as medical legal officers across the province. Medical legal officers are people who basically begin a survivor or a victim's examination in rape cases. When you will go to the police, you are then referred to an MLO who will then basically make a report of the medical evidence that is present for the violence that has just taken place. And so over here, we have some really horrible things that happen where a person's sexual history will be questioned if they've been subject to gender-based violence by medical legal officers. We have hardly any women in Sindh. Around 2 to 3 years ago, we only had 2 women as medical legal officers. And even though our courts have now banned this thing, which is called a 2-finger test. So basically, when a person who has been raped shows up at an MLO's office, 2 fingers are inserted inside their vagina to find out if the person is a virgin or not. And if you are not a virgin, then the rape is your fault. So essentially, you need to be sexually pure in the first place. So really, really disturbing, messed up things are in place. And even though our courts have banned it, it is still a cultural practice of sorts in a medical legal office. This is why we're asking for sensitization training, and we are asking that it be effective. One of our other demands is that safe houses and shelters and subsidized shelters are established for women, trans people, and non-binary persons in each district of our provinces. The shelters that already exist, they are in a terrible state. So we want increased funding for them. The other thing is that we want that the bill that has been proposed against forced conversion, we demand that it be passed so that young girls, Larissa, they are 11 years old, they are 12 years old, they are 13, they are 14. Girls that young are being forced to convert and are being forced into marriages to like 40-year-old, 50-year-old, 60-year-old Muslim men. It's absolutely atrocious. So we are demanding that the provincial government pass the bill that has been proposed against forced conversions and forced marriages. Then we are asking an end to honor killings, which are basically quite self-explanatory. Our culture is basically obsessed with sexual purity. There's sexual purity, and then there's also the fact that women are treated like property. And so often we have jirgas over here and we have tribes. And so they will use women to settle disputes. So, you know, like we'll give you our woman in marriage, or if you killed one of our people, we'll rape one of your women. And honor killing is that if a woman has ruined the reputation and the name of your family, we will kill her in the name of honor. And so honor killings are also just quite common and quite normal here. And so we demand an end to honor killings.
Now you have talked about your demands And I would like to know if you get support also from the government or who supports you in your demands.
So yes, like last year, for example, we faced a lot of backlash because of our march, and the previous year as well, we faced a lot of backlash. The provincial government supports us, and they have publicly taken a stand for the Aurat March. And so we were able to make it happen successfully. But apart from that, it's just we get so much backlash. And there's so many people, right, who like come on television and they'll slam us. They'll slam the people who come to the march. They'll slam the people who organize the march. But the state doesn't really stop this from happening, like doesn't stop the march from happening, but it's not like they listen to our demands either, right? It's not like they are doing anything about making this country safe for women and trans people and non-binary people. For example, like there is a bill that gets touted a lot. It's the Transgender Persons Protection of Rights Act 2018, and it's a federal law. So we keep talking about how we have like this revolutionary new act, but you know, it only applies to one city, which is the capital of the country, because that's a federal territory. And so it only applies in one city of the entire country. And it applies to like those state offices that deal with issues of identity. So, you know, places where we can go to get our identity cards made. That is the only place where this Protection of Rights Act for trans people applies. So it's not enough, right, that we are able to just march in the state. The people who are coming to the march, the people whose rights we're talking about, the organizers of the march are not people who are protected by the state at all. And so we have support in the sense that we're out on the street, but we are not safe when we do it.
And you, Soha, are part of the Aurat March in Pakistan. And I've seen that there are different Aurat March in Pakistan, also at different parts of Pakistan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm interested how you organize yourself as organization. How can you stay in contact also with the other women or trans or non-binary people?
I see. Okay, this is really cool. So right now, like you're speaking to me, and I'm from Karachi. So Karachi is one of the cities of Pakistan, and we are in Sindh, which is a province. So in 2018, there were a few people, like two or three people who got together. They saw the women's marches in the United States, and they're like, you know what? We should be doing that. We should be out on the street. We really need to start politicizing ourselves. We really need to start developing inclusive political platforms, and we need to get out on the street. And so, you know, it went from 2 to 3 people to like 5 to 7 to 8 to 10 to 20 to 25 to like 50 people all getting together and pulling off the first march in the city in less than 6 weeks. It was absolutely crazy. And it was one of the best things we've ever done. It's one of the best times we've ever had. And so the absolutely phenomenal thing that happened was that we were doing it in this one city here, right? And there are people that we know in other cities as well. So for example, in Islamabad and in Lahore and in Hyderabad. And you're like, hey, you guys are doing a march. We're going to do a march too. And so this is how it happened. Everyone just formed independent chapters and called themselves Aurat March and just got out on the street. And so that has been absolutely incredible. And last year and this year, we also have another city which has the Aurat March now, which is Multan. So there are 5 cities across the entire country which is going to have a slew of women and trans and non-binary persons marching across their city on 8th March. So it's absolutely fantastic. Like, I have goosebumps and like I'm getting emotional just talking about it. And so the really cool thing about it is that our organizing processes are all very different. They're all very independent. So I can, for example, speak for Karachi. So in Karachi, we basically like give an open call for the organizing committee like every year. Like it's on our Instagram and our Twitter and our Facebook. And we're like, hey, we are doing this thing. Do you want to be a part of it? Please come on board. And so it's a super open and democratic process. And it's a lot of fun. And so every year, people who want to stick around year after year and just help organize this beautiful, wonderful thing, they do. And then we also have new people coming in. So it's a rotating body. And so you get to meet new people and you get to meet and we get to meet feminists much older than us and find common ground with them and see the kind of struggles they've had. If it weren't for older feminists of this country, we would not be anywhere. We would not be able to do what we're doing. And so we owe a lot to them and to their battle and to the struggles that they've had. So the processes are super independent. We are in touch in the sense that there's like a camaraderie, like, hey, saw your manifesto. That was really cool what you guys did. Your artwork is super cool. What are you guys doing this year? What is your stance on something like this? Hey, how can we support you in something like this? So there's a lot of that, but they all remain independent. And I think that's a really cool thing about the march, because then every city like gets to have like its own flavor to the march, you know?
Wow, that's really powerful. Wow, I'm lucky to hear that. So as I'm living with a person who's also from Pakistan, he told me that in Pakistan there are also a lot of villages. There are only a few big cities. So maybe you can tell me a little bit more about how you also stay in contact with women or feminists in village, or do you have contact with them?
Yes, absolutely. There are places over here in the interior of our provinces, which I guess can be classified as rural. We have a limited outreach over there, but we do. So, for example, the first time around we did this, I think we had 1,000 women come from Thar. And Thar is interior Sindh. So that was absolutely fantastic. They came all the way from there, and we also provided them transport. And the women over there, they came and they spoke at the march. And this time around as well, one of our speakers is also from interior Sindh. But, you know, like I do feel that we can do a lot better when it comes to establishing relationships with people in the interior. It's just that, at least in our province, it is difficult. And it's just that that Karachi itself is so huge and has so many marginalized communities itself that we've spent the last 3 years developing really strong relationships with them. But we are working harder every year, and we know all the ways in which we can improve and in which we can become better. And so I think there's a lot of work left to be done when it comes to outreaching with women who are in villages. That is something we need to work on. And right now, like, we do have representation, right? Like, women from Thar came, and this time around, someone as well is also coming to speak from the interior. But that's really not enough, right? Because they're coming as a speaker at the march. But they should also, for example, be a part of organizing it, right? And I think that would obviously be a challenge. It would be really difficult. But that is definitely something that we think about and talk about and want to work on.
So now we have talked many times about the Women March tomorrow, and maybe you can tell me a little bit more what you have planned tomorrow at the 8th of March.
Oh, yes, of course. We are doing a sit-in this time around. So in Urdu, in our language, we call a sit-in a dharna. And a sit-in sounds very mild, whereas dharna in our language is a very politically charged term. It is an expression of resistance and it is an expression of anger. So usually every year we march. We all come together at a place over here that is called Frere Hall, which is this huge public park. That's where we gather, and then we all exit prayer hall, and then we have lots of speeches, and we chant lots of slogans, and it's a lot of fun, and then we all get up and we march, and we march outside on the road, and it's exhilarating. But this time around, we are thinking of a sit-in where we sit until we receive some assurances from the state that our demands will be considered. So this is the plan this year, to have a huge sit-in and to give an ultimatum to the state that these are the demands that you need to meet. Otherwise, you will continue to sit, or otherwise we'll come back again, right? Like then, like this is a yearly thing right now, but we'll be back again in 2 months. We'll be back again in 3 months. We'll be back again in a week if you don't listen. So also because right in the beginning, you expressed concerns about COVID, and that is also something that we take super seriously. A sit-in also allows us to maintain SOPs. So, for example, the plan is to have people sitting 6 feet apart and be masked at all times, and we will have sanitizers over there. Yeah, masks, sanitizers, and a 6 feet distance. And that is how we are hoping to ensure SOPs. That is the absolute best we can do. Yeah, so a sit-in communicates a lot of anger and a lot of frustration with the state. And it also allows us to enforce SOPs and make sure that people are safe.